whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We come to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody?
Hold on. I just got chided by Ben. I'm a little taken aback.
Okay, so that's so Ben stepped out into the hallway and was like, hey, buddy.
Yeah, but he gave a dirty look as he did it.
Because
I was talking to Jesse.
Dude.
I was congratulating Jesse on her 10th anniversary with her husband.
Oh, yeah.
It's her 10th
yeah.
romantic anniversary. Ever since they first started going steady,
yeah.
as the kids say.
Right, right. She's only 29.
As the kids used to say before you and I were even
going
kids.
Going steady, yeah.
She's like one of the only people I follow. I follow like 7 people on TikTok. Mm-hmm. I hardly check Twitter anymore. So basically, Jesse's the only person I really follow.
She's
on
a huge influencer
media.
To you.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I should stick with my girl, too.
She's like the Costco family to you.
That's a good example Jesse's setting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
gonna keep this marriage going.
Man.
My best gal. That's what I call her. That's what the kids say.
Oh, yeah.
That Brandy's my best gal. She loves it when I tell her that.
I've been on the business end of that Ben look before. Probably 4 or 5 times a show. Usually when I'd say, Ben, hey, Ben, we're shifting gears off this audio that we were about to play to the audio that's 10 pages down on the rundown.
I'm scared.
That's it. Yeah,
I'm
Ben
scared
agrees.
To look at him. I don't even know. I've never seen
that. He used to it.
It's like all right.
I can hardly look at you. We start at 6, man.
I know. Hey, listen, Ben. I had an interesting night last night, and I'm operating in an impaired state.
Very little sleep.
Not drunk. No chemicals were involved. Just very little sleep.
Do we get unhinged, Seth? Today?
Probably.
It's good news,
Reggie,
man.
You know what? Reggie brought up a good point yesterday when you and your literary buddy there called me unhinged.
In the expose that they did
print.
On me.
Yeah. That Reggie said, like, oh, so what is on the hinge that's coming unhinged?
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, that's the kind of thing that I bet there's a huge historical backstory to it.
To why the word unhinged is a thing?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
there's some anecdote?
True. There's probably something back in the day, like, more than just, we just think of doors being on hinges or something.
That's
but, yeah,
that's all I thought of. I just thought of, like, the Wizard of Oz, where the door just flies off the hinge in the tornado there.
I like, Reggie and I are on the same wavelength on a lot of things,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
We should probably never work together. It would end up being...
you guys would agree all the time.
No, it'd be way too many tangents.
Oh, and yeah.
Just go off and meandering.
That's
off.
That's right.
Not that Reggie's like that, but I would be a bad influence on
him. Yeah. And he's... He doesn't need that right now.
Right, no, we got focus. We got the playoffs. We got college football playoffs. We got NFL playoffs.
We got college
playoffs
football.
Abound. This is a season of plenty when it comes to playoffs, Sean.
The college football playoff thing... has me feeling weirder than the crazy schedule the Texans have been on lately.
Oh, really?
For one, Notre Dame still being alive right now is very unsettling to me. That doesn't happen very often. But that the playoff games for me, like for my team, have been on Friday, Wednesday, but then pushed to Thursday because of the tragedies in New Orleans.
Right.
And then now on a Thursday night. And then if they win this, it's on a Monday night. College football is all about what? Saturdays.
Well,
Wednesdays and Thursdays. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, that's right. This semifinal game is tonight.
It used to be about New Year's Day.
Yeah.
We broke that boundary a long time ago.
Yep.
But, and then you add to the NFL playoffs, these wildfires in L.A. might move the Rams game out of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on out
there. Well, I thought about this yesterday, too, to bring it back to the Texans game, which is I wonder if there's any of the Chargers that are being impacted by this, either directly or if it's impacting their routine at all.
I did. I was on Greg Rosenthal's podcast that he does for the NFL.com network.
I think
it's NFL Daily. And they're out there in L.A., and he was describing it to me. We recorded this a couple nights ago, and how just it's when there's wildfires in the city or, you know, in those Pacific Palisades, those areas, they're really, really good at kind of managing and containing them, like way better than when it's off, you know, in a more rural area.
Yeah.
Or even a more suburban, like traditionally suburban area. But it seems like they might be... Those limits might be getting tested right
now. That's a crazy story, man. Thoughts and prayers to everybody affected by that.
So what Greg was saying was, like, we're 2 miles away from where the fires are. This was a couple nights ago. He's like, but everybody's just kind of carrying on.
Going it's about not, their business.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. So long answer to say, there's a good chance that the players themselves probably aren't affected, but yeah. Even if it's just a few guys, that would be...
Have you seen some of the footage?
Not that, just the... Yeah, I haven't read news
stories.
Dude,
I mean, there's... I mean, some of the footage, it's...
It was the stuff I've seen is exactly what he says it looks like. There's like a wall of smoke,
yeah.
You know, and it just... Yeah.
Well, as we see with a lot of stuff, we're getting like on social media,
yeah.
Footage is popping up from people's phones that are like in it, you know, that are like in there. I'm like, get out of your house, bro. Get out of there. Like, there's this guy like standing in his kitchen filming the wall of fire outside of his
house. That's what, but I guess, and look, I'm speaking way out of turn here. I guess it's not like in when it happens out in nature and it can leap, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because they've got it so contained so well, and because they actually have streets that they can use to get places instead of having to carry water in by helicopter.
It was just the one or two that I saw, I'm like, you're really close to this fire right now. So it's crazy. And then like People Magazine has a list of all the like the celebrities that have been losing their homes.
Were you at a doctor's office or a hairdresser?
No. I get their daily.
Thrice daily
newsletter.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and so I'm using magazine as sort of a
Go ahead. Yeah.
So they have the list of all the like the celebrities, and the crazy thing in California, and I promise we're going to get to football, but this is wild.
This is Rams. Yeah.
This is apparently California has just. Like, a lot of the insurance companies have just been getting out of California.
Oh, yeah.
Because California wouldn't allow them to raise their rates.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a lot of people who are in this, like, crazy interim period where they've been trying to find insurance companies.
Yeah.
And their houses are burning to the ground.
Oh,
it's crazy. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Now, I'm going off of, like, four paragraphs of an article that I read.
That's enough for me.
So I don't know. It sounds like a deeper issue than that.
I trust your economic assessment of everything and all the reasons why.
Sounds like this is something that a sports topic will turn into, you know, if we talk about the Texans and the Chargers, it'll all circle back around to big politics getting insurance out of California.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like it's one of those things, man. So it's thoughts and prayers to everybody out there. Meanwhile, the Chargers are coming to town. The injury report is getting better and better for the Texans yesterday. Shaq Mason's the only one out right now.
Yeah.
And if we're being honest, and Shaq's hurt. I hope he gets better. He hadn't been great this year. The offensive line that they trotted out there for the Titans game, compared to the ones they had earlier this year.
Yeah.
As far as like what our choices are right now, I'm cool with the Titus at left guard, Jarrett Patterson at center, Juice Scruggs at right guard combo right now.
Yeah, and I think that one thing right now is that, look, you know, Juice Scruggs still is not the perfect football player, especially at guard. He's still young, all of that. There's a certain amount of, let's call it effective bulk in there. Because Shaq Mason's a big guy, but between his health and age, he's not really effective at using all that bulk. With those two guards that are in there right now, I feel like there's just something to be said for sheer bulk, and Titus specifically is a big dude. I was actually concerned that he might be a bit too big this year out there at tackle. At guard, and this is one thing he might learn to embrace, you can get away with being like 30 pounds fatter at guard. It's a good life. It's a good life. Everybody
for the time being.
Yeah. Well, I know. Like, he's
till retirement.
I know everybody. Like, even as everybody compliments. So anybody from the Texans that compliments Titus Howard for being willing to go down and lower himself to play guard instead of tackle, like it tells me that he still like very much does not want to be labeled a guard. But man, look. Okay, the paycheck's a little bit better at tackle. But guess what? They're all really good paychecks. And you have the chance to be... I think he's got a lot of potential as a guard. Like, he could end up
Titus,
being a really good guard.
Yeah.
Even as he's been playing the last few weeks, there's times where you can see, oh, yeah, but he's not quite comfortable there. But he's still playing really effectively. And it's just bulk in the middle. You talk about just wanting to be able to, at times, just mash people. He can do all those things. And by guard standards, he's very athletic.
Yeah.
He's an okay athlete by tackle standards. But by guard standards, that's a big old headache. And like a literal headache. I'll tell you that as an interior.
Right. Head clashing. He got paid, too. Like, Titus didn't he have to worry, at least for the next 2-3 years, didn't have to worry about what the paycheck for a guard looks like.
Yeah.
He's getting paid as an above-average right tackle right now. I'm assuming if he's being this selfless, that they're not going to take the next step and say, hey, will you be selfless enough to get paid like average left guard instead of an average right tackle?
I wonder if this is what happens. I'm tired of, like, I've sat down and I've meditated on Laremy Tunsil this year. And because I don't want to, like, come off like I'm hating on Laremy Tunsil or anything. With Laremy, it's always been that, man, yes, he's an incredible pass protector, but the complete and total package isn't there when it comes to running, run blocking, getting out on screens, not committing false starts, all that stuff. He has genuinely tried over the second half of the season. And that's where I can't ignore the 2 false starts in one quarter from last week. And yet, at least there's an understandable explanation that Davis Mills came in. Now, Laramie's the only guy that had 2 false starts with Davis Mills in, but he did make a lot of progress with that. And you can see that he's working on the run blocking. It's just that he's not going to get up to Trent Williams or Penei Sewell's level, right?
After
a career of not really giving a damn, or looking like he doesn't give a damn on run blocking. I do think there's some part of him that's kind of engaged with that. And now with Titus next to him, this might be the elixir for the sweet, sweet nectar, that Titus can be next to his buddy there at left guard. And on that long Dameon Pierce touchdown, one part of it was that Laremy and Titus had zero hesitancy about who was blocking whom. It was an exact type of scenario where earlier in the year I could have seen both the guard and Laremy thinking, okay, I'm going to work up to the linebacker, and then the defensive tackle comes free. It was quick. It was crisp, and that was nice to see. So there's potential there.
Yeah.
So now that's long. In the long term, there might be potential, but in the short term, there are some things about this offensive line configuration that it gives me a little sliver of optimism that maybe they can figure some things out that they didn't quite figure out or figure out at all in the regular season.
I'm here for it long term if that's the solution.
Yeah. Because
you drafted Blake Fisher in the second round. Yeah, I mean, you're going to reach a point where you're going, okay, well, if he's capable,
yeah,
and if he's more capable, than if there's more upside there at right tackle for him than there is for what at this point would be an aging Titus Howard. You know, he's been in the league 6 years now. Then you got to find a way to run with that solution. And if Titus is a solution at left guard, then you're not having to make the hard decision to eat a bunch of cap money.
You know what we need to do?
What's
that? We need to come up with some T-shirt, the nickname for those guys being side by side or something. Really hype it up.
Oh, Laremy and Titus?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a tag team nickname?
Yeah.
Okay.
LTT.
LTT. Yeah.
Like LT squared. Laremy Titus. Laremy Tunsil and Titus.
Yeah. Maybe a fashion-related tag team name.
No, we don't have to make it super fancy. Like, it doesn't have to be a Gucci T-shirt that we're selling for $400.
Team Coachella, yes.
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Man, we're getting there. Game's a little over 48 hours away. Texans and Chargers. Bobby Slowick met with the media. Talked about flipping the switch offensively. Can we flip the switch offensively? And he talked about the hot streaks last year versus this year, which had me asking one particular question about this year's hot streaks. We'll let you know what that is coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, can the Texans flip the switch offensively for this game on Saturday? Here was Bobby Slowick yesterday on the offense heading into Saturday's wild card round game against the Chargers.
I don't necessarily think for us the way we approach it is you're really flipping a switch. Like, naturally, you get to the playoffs and everyone's season's on the line. I'm sure everyone's talked about it. There's just a different speed to the game. There's a different physicality to the game. There's a different intensity to the game. Like, you can't avoid that. And, we know we've had some ups and some downs on offense this year, and there's been a lot of really evolving as an entire group. And I would say, like, the last 3 weeks in particular, we've really honed in on what we think we need to do in both areas, the run and the pass game, really all the way across the board that we think fits us as a group and who we have out there and our identity as a team that we can really press forward with. But then that takes time to even grow into that, And as we work through some things, even the last 3 weeks, our emphasis beyond that was we got to do everything we can to start to get hot. And that's really all it takes is if you get hot as an offense, especially around this time of year, that's That's a really good thing for your team and your organization. And I would say probably this year, generally, like I think last year we probably had a few hot streaks in there. I feel like this year we didn't have as many hot streaks and strides that we hit for multiple games as an offense this year. And that's really been our intent. Like, how on the details can we be as we go through every single one of these practices and weeks so that we can kind of start a spark?
Go ahead, Seth.
Well, no, I agree with a lot of what he said there.
Yeah,
I guess it just comes down to like to what degree do I agree with him? Because I think that there's also the element of okay, you got a different O line in there now. Titus has been a guard for a few weeks now, to where you start to can feel like okay, maybe we can do inside zone more than we thought. Mm-hmm. All that, but the question is really like okay, but can we do it versus good defenses down in the red zone? That's the hard part. You can get better at it, but still, man, to really mash the ball, which they were unable to do in the goal line area last week, but also versus a couple of real stud interior defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. But there is an avenue, and there is a little bit of a sliver of like, all right, you know what? I think we can lean into some things more than we used to. I'm skeptical that it's going to be a huge leap all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, he cited there the hot streaks, right? And we're talking about, you know, from our perspective, we're talking about what are the people's faith, the fans, media, their faith in what Bobby Slowik is talking about, the possibility of happening. And I would submit where he said we've had fewer hot streaks this year. I would submit the reason why people are pessimistic right now is you've had no hot streaks this year.
Yeah.
The offense has scored more than 30 points one time all year. I know they scored 30 in Dallas, but 7 of that was Derek Barnett.
Yeah.
The offense has scored more than 30 points one time this year, and it was against the New England Patriots, who were one of the worst teams in football. Last year, he's absolutely right. They did have, like, they had pockets in the beginning and the middle and the end of the season where you go, okay, well, we're fine. Like, yeah, like, that team last year wasn't perfect offensively by any means.
You just got to figure out how to bottle some of this stuff up. That was the reason for the hope in the offseason was, all right, look, this is what they did in year one.
Yes.
If you can build on that, then here you go. You're off to the races.
Weeks 3 and 4, they score the offense scores 30 against Jacksonville and 30 against Pittsburgh.
Last year.
Yeah. Weeks 9 and 10, they had the big game against Tampa Bay in week 9, and then they go to Cincinnati and score 30 in week 10.
CJ threw for over 500 yards versus Tampa.
In the Tampa game, yeah. I mean, and there were offensive fireworks in those games, and they ran the ball in those games, too. At least in the Cincinnati game they did. I think Devin Singletary was player of the week in that Cincinnati game. And then at the end of the year, they beat Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Cleveland in games where the offense wasn't 30 points level. I mean, in Tennessee, they scored 20 against Tennessee. They scored 26. They scored 23 against Indy. But that was a game where Nico went off and had almost 200 yards. And then the offense scored 31 against Cleveland. They had the two pick sixes to kind of pile on. My point being, like last year going into the playoffs, I felt good about the offense because we'd seen it spread out throughout the year and with different combinations of guys. Yeah. You know, like Tank was a big part of it early. Well, he was gone by the end of the year. They were still moving the football at the end of the year. This year, I got nothing to hang my hat on.
Not on the offense.
I got a 41-point output against the crappy Patriots.
The tough part of it, too, is whatever the hell's going on with Kyeme Lassiter. And God, my gosh. Kyeme Fairbairn.
Lately.
As of late. Like at the beginning of the season, I was like, he might be too good because they're too comfortable settling for 65-yard field goals.
Just kick a 73-yard field goal. We'll be fine.
False start, no problem. I'll kick a 61-yarder. Here we go.
Yep.
That's fallen apart a little bit as of late. But the one thing you can hang your hat on in terms of real hope versus the better teams, versus the playoff teams, is that, man, the defense is capable of creating just droves of turnovers. It's hard to rely on that every single week versus good playoff teams in a playoff run.
Yeah.
It's just like at some point, kind of like in baseball, and your bats, no matter how awesome your offense is, your bats are going to go dry. This is the opposite, and we're talking about the defense, but you're not going to feast on turnovers every single week against good offenses.
Well, it's funny you bring up baseball because what Bobby was saying about the offense there when he's like, you know, just you got to catch a hot streak here in the postseason. I'm like, yeah. But think about if a baseball team was. Think about if a baseball team that was batting like 239 all year.
Yeah.
Because that's what the Texans are. The Texans are a bottom. This version of the Texans offense, the one that we've watched for the second half to the back third of the season, is a easily bottom half, if not bottom third of the league offense. And that would be like a. That'd be like a baseball team heading into the playoffs that was very pitching-centric.
Yeah.
Same way the Texans are very defensive-centric.
All we need is guys to mash.
I know our OPS as a team is 704.
Yeah.
But if we can just hit that hot streak.
But this is the difference. I'm not being the analogy police on you. Like the good difference is that in baseball it's a five or a seven game series.
Yeah.
And that's where those things
even out.
It's a lot harder to
That's a good point.
It's a lot harder to fake it for 5 or 7 games.
Yes.
And yeah, that's why football is as exciting as it is in a lot of ways, because yeah, like the inferior team sometimes wins, or the inferior offense sometimes can go on a hot streak. You go about, I mean, like Joe Flacco in the playoffs. I guess is that what we'd have to hang our best hopes offensively, is that if CJ can basically, I think who CJ, he has very much the potential to be a better overall quarterback than Joe Flacco. Yeah. But Joe Flacco played out of his brain the year they won Super Bowl.
I tend to think it's more, somebody made this analogy on my podcast, in the mailbag on the Utopia Football podcast. Flacco's a good one, but Flacco played at a monster level that postseason. Eli, the year they beat the Patriots the first time, was very good that postseason. But he was the MVP of the Super Bowl, but that was largely because he was the quarterback of the team that beat the Patriots. That team was built similarly to the Texans, and their pass rush was what was going to win stuff.
And it was. They played a hyper-aggressive style of defensive line play. They got upfield, they penetrated, they did all those things, and yeah, they were kind of the fuel for that team.
So to answer your question, I think there's a better chance that CJ looks more like Eli in that postseason than looks like Flacco. Flacco was 11 touchdowns and no interceptions that postseason.
Yeah.
Like, he was crazy good. I don't know that this and I think CJ himself has that in him. I don't know that this offense has the support system around him to go on a Flacco-like run, but I think there's enough there to do what the Giants did back when I think they were the 4 seed also. Like, they were the worst. They were either a wild card team or they were the worst of the division winners. So yeah, so maybe. Caserio, you asked Caserio about this yesterday on the show. We had Nick Caserio
on the Payne and Pendergast show.
On the Payne and Pendergast show. It's a good show. I check it out a lot. You asked him, why have there been execution issues on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, and it's never one thing, Seth, and I'm not trying to like be ambiguous here or jump around, but I would say sometimes it's defensively, like they have a call that matches up with your call and, you know, puts you in a disadvantageous position, or decision making. Instead of throwing a ball away, you know, maybe you try to do something more than there is. So it's never one thing. Usually goes back to the fundamentals. Are we getting the blockers distributed in the proper way? Are we making the right decisions? Are we taking care of the football? Is the route depth the right? Are you in the right spot? Did you have an ME on the play? So it's never one thing. So it's always probably two or three different things. And at times we've been able to get the ball in the end zone down the red area. And other times we haven't. We had some opportunities, even going back to the Tennessee game. We got the ball in the red area there on a first drive, scored a couple touchdowns in the beginning, got stopped there in some other situations, missed a throw, could have done something a little bit better. So it always goes back to basic fundamental execution. And sometimes the defense does better than the offense and vice versa, and that's part of the cat and mouse game, you know, when you're playing.
I guess the big thing about that is that everything he described, I think, is things that I was thinking about. And yes, there are some times where, like, just by luck of the draw, it's the wrong call versus that defense, and like, that happens to every single offensive coordinator. So I guess it's a matter of frequency with which it happens, and with the players, with their lack of execution. I mean, there's something to be said for, man, if you can just, every now and then, like, blunt force trauma is the best course of action.
Yeah.
And you can get away with your technique failing a little bit, or maybe the imperfect play call, if you can just go out and just physically beat people. And that's what I'm torn with right now on this offense, is it's so hard to talk about one position group and why it's not working out without also, like, either making excuses for them or an explanation that involves another position group playing poorly. It's across the board to the point where it feels like you've built this offense on a foundation of sand, and it's just really hard to lean into anything too hard because you can't get the proper execution over across all 11 guys. I will go back and say that there's some things on the offensive line that I do think they've improved over the course of the season. A lot of the really egregious communication errors and everything like that, that got cleaned up midway through the season, kind of coincided with Patterson playing center. And then I think with Titus at guard, they've got enough of a sample size now that they can start to feel like, okay, you know what? Laramie and Titus work well together in this regard. Maybe we can run some more power and inside zone concepts than we could before. So there's something there. It's just like it's all that stuff that it's like when you show up for a test and you're like, I really wish I'd studied for this.
Right. Yeah, we're in the finals now. Yeah, we're finals now. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like if you and I were having this conversation, we had just talked to Nick yesterday and it was week three, then I'd be like what you're just saying now about, well, you know, maybe we got something here with Titus playing left guard or whatever. I'd be like, yeah, okay. And they got 14 weeks to figure it out. They play the Chargers in 2 days and it's win or go home. And that'll be where it gets interesting to me, because I am firmly somebody that's like, this offense is what it is right now. I don't think a switch is getting flipped.
Yeah.
I don't think they're catching a hot streak here offensively. We're hoping
that Deontay Johnson shows up as the best version of
himself.
That's
where we are. Kinda, yeah. Like,
it's hero ball.
Yeah. Right?
That's it's more realistic to hope for hero ball. And then it is that, oh, like all of a sudden they're going to go out there and look like a finely tuned machine.
Totally. And so that's why I think what Nick said is really interesting, because the offseason is when we're going to get the answers as to what it was the most.
Yeah.
What it was the most. Like where he started in going, hey, man, sometimes they have a call that's the perfect call for you. Well, that sure does happen a lot against the Texans. You know, like there is a reason why certain guys win at poker every year and certain guys lose at poker every year in the World Series of Poker. Bobby Slowik is not a very good poker player right now. And so is it Bobby Slowik? Is it that? The MEs, the mental errors, is what ME stands for. You know, like, we'll find out who the guys are that have been making more of those than anybody else possibly in the offseason if they move on from certain
guys. And, you know, I go back to various times with the Texans, through different coaches, Kubiak or O'Brien or anybody else. There's times where you can just tell, all right, the offensive line, they're not dumb guys, but for some reason, they're not comfortable and confident in what they're supposed to be doing on the play.
Yeah.
And that's gotten better, like we talked about earlier with Laramie and Titus. But it's not at the level where you want it to be. But that does go back to, all right, what is it? Are these guys just not good, or is the message not clear enough? Like, I don't care about which specific play is being called. When guys look like they don't know who they're supposed to block, that's a problem. When it happens when it happens frequently. As far as Bobby Slowik, in Jonathan and Alexander's mailbag yesterday, somebody had asked him about Bobby Slowik, and I think Jonathan was probably correct when he said that he doesn't think that the Texans like have made a decision on that.
I would agree with that.
Which could mean that they are definitely going to consider making a change, but I think both D'Amico and Nick are very much like true to their word. I think when like they want to focus on what's in front of them, and then they'll figure that stuff out after the season. They'll kind of sit down in a room for 2 days and figure all these issues out.
Totally agree.
Kind of like Jerry Jones is doing with Mike McCarthy. Jerry's looking for the answer in a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue.
That'll work itself out. Hey, gear up for the playoffs at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Thanks to our friends at Academy for getting us ready for this weekend with our Ready to Roll Division Championship playoff t-shirts and Division Championship hats. You can get yours at your local Academy Sports and Outdoors before this weekend. Headlines up next. We got the injury report for the Texans. A little hardware for one Houston Texan.
Whoa.
We got an Astros contract signing. We've got news on the NFL playoffs. Yeah, we got a lot to get to, and we'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to headlines, and we'll start with the Texans. The injury report yesterday. Good news. Shaq Mason, the only one out right now. We have several guys getting bumped up here to limited or full. John Metchie and Danico Autry and Jake Hansen bumped up from out on Tuesday to practicing yesterday. Foley Fatakasi's been practicing.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. Christian Harris back at practice. Jeff Okuda back at practice. So when we talk about Ladd McConkey, and if he lines up in the slot, does Kamari Lassiter go in the slot? At least, I mean, not that Jeff Okuda is any great shakes, but at least if you choose to bump Kamari Lassiter down inside, it's not D'Angelo Ross out there. It's Jeff Okuda, who at least has traits.
I think that it's, and you don't have a big sample size to go off of, but the games where Kamari Lassiter played in the slot the most were the Chiefs game and the Ravens game. And as a whole, as a defense, he didn't play as much in the Ravens game, not nearly as much as he did in the Chiefs game. I wonder if they look at it and just think, man, it's just having both Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley on the outside makes everything else that much better. It makes Miles Bryant a better slot corner.
Yeah, good point.
Just because we can lock things down on the outside.
The Aaron Colvin effect.
Yeah.
When he had A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey on the outside.
As a Texans like, yeah, bring him in here. He's the best slot corner. Oh, they cut him already. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Doesn't
know where to line up on a long field goal or on third down to allow a long field goal against the Saints. Very specific situation. So that's good news. I'm very excited about the Texans having their full complement of linebackers in this game.
Yeah.
Against a team that is as run heavy as the Chargers, having Azeez Al-Shaair, Christian Harris, and Henry Toa being able to run sideline to sideline.
Yeah, the first half of the season, just by necessity, they barely played in their base 4-3 defense with three linebackers out there. And that's, especially in the playoffs, that's the classic, okay, playoff football, you're going to see some teams that can run the ball or focused on it and all that. Yeah. You just want some bulk and heft in there at times. The upside of it is that Henry Toa got a lot of playing experience.
Yeah.
And I know playing different positions, et cetera, but he improved so much as a football player. That's very intriguing.
You think they're in base way more in this game than they were throughout the season?
Oh, that's probably a good question. I mean, some of that's just going to depend on how the Chargers come out and what personnel they line up in. So, this is where it gets dicey. Chargers, they are really good at attacking the middle of the field. Texans defense, it's one of the sore spots, one of the weaknesses. But they also haven't had healthy linebackers the entire time. Mm-hmm. So, Ladd McConkey, and that's the other part about what you do with a cornerback. Stingley doesn't play much in the slot at all. Ladd McConkey gets the majority of his snaps in the slot. Ladd McConkey can be really brutal and lethal with his route running over the middle, all of that stuff. It's gonna be hard to eliminate Ladd McConkey from the game. Like, even if you tried to scheme it up with the current personnel, it's going to be hard to limit him. That's why I revised my pick'em on Ladd McConkey. I've turned it into a hedge. I've got one where he's under 69 and a half yards or whatever, and I've got one where he's over. I think the big thing with McConkey is going to be, don't let him turn those plays into explosives.
Yes.
You just got to try to keep him in front of you as much as possible.
Yep. Speaking of Derek Stingley Jr., he was voted first team All-Pro by the players. The Players Association apparently took a look at the writers and said, hey, you guys don't know what you're talking about. We're going to start our own All-Pro
players
team.
With a Z.
Players with a Z on it, yeah.
This one's got more cachet.
Absolutely. So he was named first team All-Pro. Him and Patrick Surtain are the two cornerbacks.
Okay.
This ain't AFC-NFC. This is like the two best corners in football.
Some people don't get that distinction. I understand why. I don't think I did until I was like out of the NFL. Like, the difference between Pro Bowl and All-Pro.
Yeah.
All-Pro is just no best conferences or anything. It's just the very best.
Best of the best, yep. So it's him and Patrick Surtain are the two top corners, according to their peers, too. Respect of your peers, Seth. That's big. That's the only Texan who made it. They don't have the total voting or anything like that. But congrats to Derek Stingley Jr., the first of what I'm sure will be many accolades.
Are we officially acknowledging that as like one of the bona fide, like, oh yeah, that award? Because there's a few different All-Pro lists. There's lots of All-Pro lists, but usually the AP is the one that they
wrote an article about it, so I put it in headlines.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's...
I'm just curious.
The AP one is the one that, like, when they're talking about the Hall of Fame and
that's the one that goes in Pro Football Reference and everything.
Yeah, yeah. This one, we should make up our own. You know, why not?
Well, I thought we should. We need to have a physical award for the Circle of Swarm.
The Swarmies.
That's the way they do it in Hollywood to dupe celebrities into making an appearance, is you give out awards.
Can you ask AI?
Nobody knows what the hell the Golden Globe is, but they get a bunch of celebrities to show up.
Sometime today, can you ask AI to make a trophy for swarming, like for like what a trophy?
Oh, a picture of it.
A picture of a trophy where it's for swarming.
I'm so off of AI right now. I mean, I canceled my Gemini subscription because if I were to follow all the advice of AI, even though it gave me some good advice while I was experimenting with it,
dude,
when it came to the sports side of things, I'd be jobless right now. I say enough stupid stuff on my own. I don't need that. I don't need this thing telling me that Ed Reed went to a small football school.
That's all the more
University
reason to
of
keep
Miami.
It.
You hear that, Ben?
We should.
AI called the University of Miami, your alma mater, a small school football program.
Sounds about right. I would say
small school, the football program, a little bigger than the school.
Yeah,
that's probably where they messed up. I bet it was looking at, but that's the kind of stuff AI messes
enrollment,
up.
Enrollment. Yeah,
they're looking at enrollment compared to the big time state schools.
I would submit that that's all the more reason to keep the Gemini subscription, because we could do like stupid things that AI said, you know, like
I'm not
stupid sports takes
I'm
by
not
AI.
Good enough at being smart to pretend I'm not smart.
I got you.
Does that make sense?
No.
All right.
Exactly. Let's get to the Astros. The Astros and Luis Garcia agree on a 1 year, $1.875 million deal. Luis Garcia.
Yeah, Luis.
Yeah, he's back. He's one of a handful of players. I'm counting eight players that are arbitration eligible, and there's offers coming here soon. The big ones will be Framber Valdez will literally be the biggest of those because he's in his last year of arbitration. He's expected to get anywhere from $15 to $20 million. I'll be anxious to see what Jeremy Pena gets in arbitration.
Yeah,
you know,
like, yeah.
See what he, you know, and he's early in his arbitration years.
Well, and then the arbitration and the way they decide everything and the way they gauge it and all that. Like, I mean, baseball people in general, they're much more impressed with what you've done over the sum total of your career. And you got to factor in that playoff run there.
Well, tenure's a big thing with it. Yeah. Like when Kyle Tucker was an All-Star, his first year in arbitration, he had already made the All-Star team.
Yeah.
I think twice. He got $5 million, and that was a big sticking point with him and the team. Remember, he wanted 7.5. So it's not like any of these guys, like from, you know, like, you know, none of these guys are getting $30 million or anything like that. But we'll find out. Dubon's on there, Jake Meyer's on there, Chaz, a couple other guys.
We never talked about the fact that Jeremy Pena is dating Julia Grosso, or is it Grosso?
She plays for Chicago in the Women's Soccer League, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Good for him. He did well.
Is she Italian? I think she like played for the Italian World Cup.
She's got dark features, right? Like she's dark hair. She's Italian feet.
The picture I'm looking at, she's got blonde hair.
She does?
Can women do that? Can they change their hair
color? Can you guys change your hair color?
Yeah.
Good for Jeremy Pena, man. Soccer, it's a growing trend.
I got so uncomfortable. Even though we're talking about an Italian person potentially.
I meant her hair.
I know. As soon as you... I got so uncomfortable.
Her olive skin.
When you said that. Wait.
Dark features.
How do we classify this human being? I don't know if...
well, you said it.
Feel a little too dark to come to my Thanksgiving.
Said it after you said Italian. Stop it. I said it after you said Italian. If I had said that out of the blue... Then I understand you feeling
like
that way.
She looks like a papist.
Get the hell out of here with that. All right. By the way.
You're innocent of it.
By the way. It made you uncomfortable.
I'm just trying. We just had a discussion about how stupid I am, and now I'm going to get lumped in with the anti-Italianites. You know?
Do they have a name?
For people who are anti-Italian?
Yeah.
Churchill.
Okay.
That's what they call them.
That's good. That's a good reference. They might move the Vikings and Rams playoff game because of all the fires out in California. Might get moved to Phoenix. So we'll see about that. We'll keep our eye on that.
That sucks for
them. That's the Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, yeah. But that'd be interesting. But that kind of harkens back to the Buffalo scenario a couple years ago when they had their blizzards and they had to go play at a neutral site.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. Where did they play? Cincinnati or Cleveland? They played Cincinnati in Cleveland or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, I forget. I remember the instance. I don't remember the particulars of it. Yeah. All right, those are your headlines. We had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday. He said something right at the outset of the show that I think we interpreted it one way, and The Drive with Sterner and Hughley interpreted it maybe a little bit differently.
We're seeing things through different filters
through a different lens. We've got the audio from The Drive. We've got the audio from Nick.
We've got the audio from those people.
Those people in the afternoon. I'm not going to ask about their features either.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do that coming up next.